Philadelphia, Philadelphia, are you ready? City of brotherly love, home of smoking Joe Frazier. Come on. It's about that time. FetLifeStation.com. Philly Fridays, baby. Come on.
It was $100 million and a bad chick. Imagine this, a Muslim nice, it felt like that. I had it back on the mattress, staring at the ceiling, try connect the dots, but it's all making those attachments. I'm talking dreaming so hard, so nice, it felt like draft day. You know, my stepbrother used to flip them bags outside the crib like it was trash day. No Kim K, buddy, back, yeah, yeah. But when you get it fast money, slow down, don't crash. With all the drive in the world, swear you still need gas. Look, think about it.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to LWOP Radio, Life Without Parole Radio. This is Stacey Mandel, and I am co-hosting the show with Robert Groves, Reentry Rob from Phoenix. He is serving a life sentence without parole, and he will be joining us at about 9:35 today. But right now, I am on with Carmen Woods from SCI Phoenix as well, serving a life sentence. Good morning, Mr. Woods. Good morning. Hold on a minute. Let's get you a little bit louder. Okay. You good? Can you hear me? Okay. Good morning. Good morning. Sorry. I know we have some urgency before you get cut off. So I just wanted to get right to some questions. Can you tell us who was Carmen Woods growing up prior to prison?
Yes. Carmen Woods, me. I was the youngest of 11 children. I grew up in West Philadelphia. Of course, my mother spoiled me, tried her best to keep me on track. She taught me how to read and write. Still think of the time before I ended up preschool when my mother would give me the cue cards and, you know, teach me how to read and write, you know, with cue cards. And, you know, pretty much, you know, I was really secure and happy with my mother. I was a real mother's boy, like, you know, and I really appreciate my mother, and I miss my mother. You know, my father was there off and on, and my mom ran the show, though. She ever wore many hats, and my mom was the center of the family. And then, with that, you know, I grew up. By the time I was 10 and 12 years old, I was, you know, shoveling payments when it snowed for a little hustle, cutting grass, taking care of the neighbors, running errands for the neighbors. I was in organized sports, and then PAL. I was at the executioner's boxing. Pal playing basketball. I had mentors along with my family, you know, who was my main mentors, of course.
This is a call from SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution. This call is subject to reporting.
I was an average young man growing up in a, you know, in a middle class neighborhood. You know, we wasn't rich, but we didn't, you know, want for nothing to eat. And we, you know, lived the basic life, the means that we had to work with. I was in trouble from time to time. You know, getting into petty crimes because I like the money from the hustling when I was only cutting grass and other things like that. And I would get in trouble from time to time. And my mother would scold me. Tell my father, he would scold me. Tell my brother and my sisters, they would scold me. And we was a big family. We had our dysfunctions, but we stayed together. We was very unified in our own dysfunctional ways.
Thank you. I don't want to interrupt you. However, I want to make sure we get to all of my questions before your time gets cut off. Can you tell us, please, what year were you sentenced? How old were you when you were sentenced? What did it feel like in that moment being sentenced to a life without parole in prison?
Well, first I was convicted in November 1982, and I was sentenced to first degree murder. When I was convicted to first degree murder in 1982, and I was sentenced December 8th, 1983. So 12, a life plus 12 and a half, 25 years. And of course, and when I got sentenced, it felt like a out-of-body experience to me. I mean, I didn't, you know, I just like really wasn't there. And I told my family prior to getting sentenced not to be there, because I knew I was going to be, you know, this judge, I had the worst judge, Sable, was not trying to hear anything about Hendersonville irrelevant to him. So by the time I did get sentenced, I thought it wouldn't be such a shock to my conscience, but I was wrong. It was a shock to my conscience, I mean, no doubt. And, you know, I tried to, it stressed me out. It stressed me out for a couple of years, and I dealt with it, but nevertheless, so, you know, I got over that, and I continued to struggle with freedom.
And so you said, I'm sorry, it was 1980?
It was 1983, but I actually got sentenced.
Okay.
In November 82, and I got convicted.
So how many years have you been doing already? Have you done?
I have 40 and a half years in right now.
This is a okay. call from SCI, so, Phoenix State Correctional Institution. This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
What did you do to stay busy in those 40-plus years that you've been incarcerated?
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, my main thing was education. I was always inspired. I didn't appreciate school when I was on the streets. I really didn't. I dropped out of 10th grade. But once I got in prison, education was one of my main goals. I got around some of my older lifers and some of my older friends I knew from the street. And the thing was, don't waste no time here. Go to school, get your education. And they quoted to me, and I always remember the quote, but Malcolm X said that education is the passport to the future. And of course, you know, I really appreciated that. And I tried to stand by that. You know, once I woke my brother, one of my older brothers, and, you know, he woke me back. And he encouraged me to get my education as well, because he said my writing skills were shot, because that's from being out of school for so long. So, you know, of course, education was my main thing. And I took his advice. I got my GED in 1985. I would go to other, try to get some college courses later on. So that was, you know, took them by an act of Congress in 1996, I believe it was. I also got into some vocational classes and things of this nature from, you know, culinary, plumbing, metal shop, different apprenticeships that I did embark upon, which I did list on thegrovenotebook.com for people who want to see that. They can get more information on that.
Yeah, what was the last one that you said?
I had apprenticeships. I got apprenticeship in culinary degree, apprenticeship for cooking and baking, things of this nature.
Okay.
And I was saying they can get more information on some of the, you know, certificates and programs and, you know, vocational programs that I participated in on GloveNotebook.com.
Yes. Okay, we got that.
Of course, my Islam and kept me busy learning how to be a Muslim, try to be a better person, there's no doubt. Gotten a lot of different volunteer programs in here, like Real Street Talk, Life is Program, Restore to Justice, et cetera, et cetera.
Amazing. I need to ask you how this sentence has affected your family.
I can honestly say it devastated them, mentally, physically, and financially. And again, like any family, we have our dysfunctions. However, we always remain as one body. And if the foot hurt, the whole body felt it. And that's what my situation was. You know what I mean? Everybody, it had a riveting effect throughout my whole family. And that's extended family as well. Let alone my brothers, my mother, father, sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, nephews, and nieces. Until this day, for those who are still alive, it still affects them.
What avenues have you utilized to try to regain your freedom?
Well, I have utilized courts for the last 40 years. I'm still in the courts to this day. I've been, you know, I never had much faith in the commutation system. I mean, it's been too political, and it's not realistic in me applying for a commutation. So I never really put it in up until this point. I have one in now because of the system change, and, you know, we had different people that were in positions. They were going to try to give us an even playing field, at least a better playing field, if not even an even playing field, where it was some type of hope. And, you know, for the most part, I'm in there now and hoping for that, but I'm still in the courts, too.
Wow. And you're doing that yourself?
Well, I started off doing it myself, and I did get some help with a lawyer. I mean, and being that I was taking care of my own legal work for a time, I have learned much about the law and the system and how much, you know, my constitutional rights were being violated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just for the sake of time, I have a justiceforcarmen.com website, and I have a lot of this laid out on there.
Say it again. Say it slower, what the website is.
justiceforcarmen.com. I have a lot of this laid out on my website, how I was wrongly convicted and things of this nature, and how much evidence that's been found throughout the years to show how the DA's office participated in the fraud and perjury and supporting perjury with a witness and coerce a witness and things of this nature. So for the sake of time, just so we can move on, people can really go on there and find out more information about that.
Okay. Thank you. So can you speak a bit, you know, you mentioned your faith. Can you speak to your faith and what's kept hope alive for you in your life?
Well, you know, I became a Muslim since 1985, you know, and that changed my outlook on everything. And patience, more than anything, that it encourages me in the Quran to have patience. And it's a quote. And Allah says, "And all you who believe, seek help and patience and prayer. Truly, Allah is with the patient." Allah has been, and that's the hope in itself, that patience. So that keeps me hopeful. I mean, knowing that Allah, God, is overseeing everything. And if I stay patient and I stay consistent, it's true to what I know, I'm going to be successful eventually. However, though, I will say this, Allah has been kind to me. And it's by His grace, I'm still here with will to fight, and I have all my faculties intact. It's by His grace, my family has always been supportive to me, along with my community. Faith is what my life evolves around, and my faith is Islam, and all praise be to Allah for my faith. I thank Allah for that.
Real quick, were you 18 when you were incarcerated?
I was 19.
19. So you're 59, 60?
I'm 60.
Okay.
Yes, I just turned 60 in December.
Okay. Where are you currently in your battle for freedom? I don't know if you touched on that.
By the grace of Allah, God, I definitely found some other evidence where deals were made with the DA's office. They never disclosed with this witness in my case. And I put in a PCRA, and I'm trying to renew certain rights along with new evidence that I received. And, we recently just received DA's files, because Krasner had an open file policy down there now. So, and then these DA's files, that this lawyer that's working with me now, he tells me that the DA has been withholding exculpatory evidence for 40 years now.
You said withholding evidence?
Right. Yes, they have been withholding evidence. And it was exculpatory, not just evidence, exculpatory evidence. And this is what we're going to be amending in my PCRA right now. Yeah, man. So hopefully, you know, by the will of God, Allah, you know, some success will be on the way along these lines. And I'm not, you know, they had this thing, this time bar stuff that was going on for some years now. That's really been crushing us in these courts lately. But hopefully, you know, I have a real good opportunity to overcome this right now with this new evidence that comes from the DA's files that I'm going to be presenting.
Oh, Godspeed. So,
yes.
I have a final question for you. Can you tell everyone what do you want society to know about you, about Carmen Woods?
Well, of course, prior to coming to jail, of course, I was 19, I was young. But I was a son. I had a mother, and I had a father that I would never see again. However, I am a father now. I'm a grandfather, a brother, an uncle, a neighbor, a friend. And I want to get back to life and fulfill these titles. I mean, I want to fulfill these titles in society, not just through the phone or through a visit. And then I want to offer what I've learned in 40 years to my community. I want to offer what I've been administering in circles to younger men in prison. But I've been a mentor, and I do administer classes, and we sit in circles, and we talk about...
You have 1 minute left.
You know, now to some of I want to take this to some of the troubled men in my community. You know what I mean? So I hope that my message, I do want to take this harsh about my family as well and be home as a leader amongst them. And I need my family. My family needs me. And, I hope that things will work out. That's what I would like society to know. You know, those are some of the things I would like society to know.
Thank you, Mr. Woods. It's really been a pleasure speaking with you. And I'm thinking of you, and your story is going to be heard by people, and it's powerful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it too, and me and my family will continue to stay patient, hopeful, and resilient in spite of the frustration and disappointments and disrespect that the system has been placing on us for the years. And you have a good day and much success to you, and thank you to you and your audience as well.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
So, everyone, please stay with us. We're just going to take a quick little interlude here. And when I come back, I'm going to be speaking with Carmen's sister, Regina Woods. Making sure that I have, yes, that's Regina Woods, in a couple of moments. So please don't go anywhere.
All I wanted was $100 million and a bad chick. Imagine this, a Muslim nice, it felt like that, I had it. Back on the mattress, staring at the ceiling, try connect the dots, but it's not making those attachments. I'm talking dreaming so hard, so nice, it felt like draft day. You know, my stepbrother used to flip them bags outside the crib like it was trash day. No Kim K, buddy, bag, yeah, yeah. But when you get it fast, money slow down, don't crash. With all the drive in the world, swear you still need gas. Look, think about it.
Hi, everybody. We're back. This is Stacey Mandel with Life Without Parole Radio, LWAP Radio. My co-host, Reentry Rob, Robert Groves, will be joining us at about 9:35. And Regina, are you there? Okay,
yes.
Everyone, this is Regina Woods. Regina is the sister of Mr. Carmen Woods, who we just heard from. Good morning, Regina.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm thankful. Law is awesome. Thankful.
Okay. So I wanted to ask you some questions.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is, I'm curious about your earliest memories of Carmen. What are some of those?
Carmen is the youngest of 11 children. My mother struggled to raise 11 children on her own because my father died when I was 7 and Carmen was about 4. So we experienced plenty of cold winters because my mother couldn't always purchase the oil heat, and food was scarce. That was my version. I heard my brother saying, yeah, we did eat, but, you know, 11 kids, it was a little bit, you know, difficult. So when you are hungry, you become creative. Carmen and my brother Alan, who were 2 peas in a pod at early ages, 8 or 9, found ways to make money. They cut grass for the people, bag groceries at the market, and shovel snow. Snow was the big paydays. Most of the time, they didn't have the proper attire, glove, boots, hat, so, but they would go out all day into the night, shoveling, making money. So I too wanted to make money. I once tried shoveling snow. I did one property, and I quit, and I cried, because I too didn't have the proper attire, boots, gloves, and hat.
Oh.
So I was cold, wet, and hurt. Hurt because I couldn't do what they did. I was a girl. I felt hurt. However, my brothers, Carmen and Alan, would share their earnings. Food was always the goal. So we would indulge in pizza, steak, hoagies, McDonald's, food that was a rare treat for us. So when it snowed, I'm reminded of those days. Those are days of good days when we had good food.
Yeah. About how old were you? Do you remember that snow incident?
If he was, well, you know.
I'm curious about you.
Oh, probably about 12.
Okay.
Probably
so,
about 10. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. How hard has it been since not having him home with you and your family?
It's been hard, very hard on the family not having Carmen home. As I said earlier, Carmen is the youngest of 11 children. So he was my mother's baby. So when he got locked up, it broke her heart. She was already sick, but this put her in a depressed state. And she only became sicker and died 2 years into his sentence. His baby mama was pregnant. She had to give birth without him being present and raise their son on her own. it affected all the other family because our family was and still is poor financially. We're rich in love, but we're poor financially. So we have to do fundraisers and all kinds of stuff to raise money for legal fees for Carmen and so forth. So it gets stressful. Yes.
What's the name of his website again?
JusticeForCarmen.com.
JusticeForCarmen.com. Thank you. So what's kept you so strong over all these years when it comes to the roller coaster ride of fighting for his freedom?
Carmen has kept us strong, and I believe it is due to his faith. Carmen is always optimistic, forbearing, patient throughout, thoughtful, and more. I feel like if he can be that way after 40-something years of being incarcerated, me and the family have no choice but to be supportive.
Mm. Can you please speak to just some of the avenues, or all of the avenues, your choice, that you've taken to restore his freedom?
We have given fundraisers after fundraisers, skating party, bowling party, dinner sales, etc., all to pay for the lawyers, to go for the many appeals that to the Supreme Court, the lower courts, etc., because I don't know all the courts, but we've been in court ever since Carmen been in prison. We have canvassed the
40 years.
Yes.
And I it's a lot of court.
I haven't even counted up the money that's been spent, but yeah, it's a lot. And we have canvassed the neighborhoods where the crime took place, seeking evidence and new witnesses. Homer Lane, who is now deceased, finally had admitted on a recanted statement to Dan Quayler, which is a news reporter who now retired. But he claimed it on video that he lied at trial. So that was one of the things that we thought that would really resonate in the courts, but it didn't. They refused to acknowledge it. So, and then we sold out politicians like Curtis Jones. Recently, I was speaking to the district attorney Krasner in reference to Carmen's case, and I'm going to keep on going back at him to really look into Carmen's case again and again and again, because Carmen, we want him home.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I understand that. If you could speak things into existence, what would it be like to have him home?
If I could speak things into existence, Carmen would be home working a 9-to-5 job for a company that hire parolees, because all companies don't, and working for me part-time, helping me with the real estate because I need help. He would work on some of his dreams of entrepreneurship through obtaining certificates or a degree, whatever it takes. He would spend much time with his family, vacationing, loving on us. He would be a free man, a man who could choose which part of his house he chooses to sit, eat, or sleep. Last but not least, he would complete whatever program happily that keeps him out of prison.
I bet. So what's something that you would like the world to know about your brother?
I would like the society to know that Carmen's thought process has changed since he has been incarcerated. I credit that to his faith. Islam forbids evil and encourages the good. So Carmen's desire is to do as much good as possible with the rest of his life. We talk all the time, and we both realize life is a test, and that we all are being tested in love. Patience, forgiveness, and prayers are the keys to success of passing the test. He also believes faith without works is dead, and work without faith is dead. I think everybody kind of knows what that means. So through his faith, he will continue to fight for his freedom, because the struggle is the test, and he is awaiting the reward.
Mm-hmm. If you had the Board of Pardons panel right in front of you right now, What would you say, like, how would you get to it to convince them that your brother is deserving of a second chance?
Kwame is deserving of a second chance because, one, he is remorseful. Two, he used his time of incarceration to better himself educationally and skillfully by participating in the many programs the prison has offered. I believe you already spoke about the programs. He has spiritually embraced the right way and not the wrong way, and has mentored the youth in and out of prison based on his experience, and looks forward to the free world to do the same. His intentions is to come out and be a mentor to the youth to divert them from making the same mistakes he made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in my opinion, in my humble opinion, I don't think there's anybody more qualified than someone who's gone through that full process and cycle themselves to be a mentor for youth. Are you a believer in general of second chances, or are you just like, you know, it's your brother? Someone could say, well, of course, this is your brother, but can you tell us about your view of second chances in general?
Yes, I am a believer in second chances. My sister was killed by her husband, and after he served about 20 years, I stopped, my family and I stopped protesting against his release. Over the 20-something years he served, my faith has also increased, and I too have a different outlook on life. We all have done things we regret, but unfortunately we can't turn back time. But we can forgive. We don't forget, but we can forgive. And so I'm at the stage that I have forgiven him. And we just stopped protesting. So I don't know what happened to him because I didn't even care, you know, after I stopped protesting.
Mm-hmm. So your opinion when it comes to the criminal justice system and life sentences, would you like to talk about that for a little bit?
My opinion of the criminal justice system is that it is corrupt, and it disproportionately targets people of color. In most states across the country, life is 25 years with possibility of parole. Pennsylvania and about 5 other states practice death by incarceration, life without parole. In Pennsylvania, 65% serving life without parole are black people. I truly never felt racism until my brother went to prison.
Can you say that again, that last line about you truly didn't?
I truly didn't.
Didn't. Okay, we want to hear the didn't.
I truly didn't feel racism until Carmen went to prison. Carmen was convicted on a lie by an alleged witness who the DA knew was lying at trial. Information that we have always known, but has recently been verified by information that we are now receiving from the DA's office, the homicide files.
Mm-hmm. Can you repeat what you were saying at the very end there? There was a pause. I just want you to repeat what you said just in case we didn't hear it.
Carmen was convicted on a lie by an alleged witness, Homer Lane, who the DA knew was lying at trial. Information that we had always known. We always knew he was lying, but has recently been verified. We got information from the DA office now to verify that they knew he was lying, which is some old Carmen knows. I think he explained it to you. I don't know the terminology that they call it, but we are now in court for that.
Okay. So what advice do you have for families who are also struggling with the fact that their loved one is serving a life sentence without parole, without any eligibility for parole?
My advice for families is to be supportive in whatever way you can. If you can visit, visit, but if not, accept their phone calls or write. Want for your brother what you would want for yourself. We all would want support. However, we are human and we do get weary, tired of running up and down highways and back and forth. That is okay to get weary, but only for a little while. we got to resume the support. Get back in there and support them because they really do need us. They need the support.
Regina, is there anything else? I think the words speak for themselves, but is there anything else that you would like to say?
I definitely want to say and reiterate over and over again, we have a website, justiceforcarmen.com. That website was put together by my sister, Alvita, and Darlene, they put it together, and it's a very good website. It has so much information on about Carmen's case. Please visit it, justiceforcarmen.com. Yes.
justiceforcarmen.com. Okay. Thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you for taking the phone call from your brother. So for everybody who's listening, we need those who are incarcerated to call someone on their call list, which is typically a family member, so that I can be then connected. So thank you for that as well. Thank you for your inspiration in terms of, how to stay strong when times are really tough. And I wish you and your family all the best.
And I want to thank you for allowing us to have this platform to speak on Carmen's behalf as far as his case. Again, I would just say that if there's anybody out there who helps support us in any kind of way, financially, legally, because we still are struggling, to stay in the courts. It takes a lot of money. It takes education, skills, legal skills, and so forth. So we are a work in progress. Thank you.
Okay, Regina. Thank you, and be well.
All right.
So you can go ahead and you can hang up.
All right.
Okay. Regina, are you off the line? Okay. It looks like Regina's off the line. So we're going to take another just quick musical interlude. And when I return, I'm going to talk for a few moments just about how I met Robert Groves, how I'm involved. And then Robert should be calling in at 9:35, hopefully. Okay. Hello, everyone. I'm back. It's Stacey Mandel, LWOP Radio, Life Without Parole. Robert Groves should be calling in a minute, and I'll have to take another quick musical break just to kind of patch him in. But I just wanted to say that the way that I met Rob is because I'm a volunteer prison monitor with Pennsylvania Prison Society, and I went out on a visit. It was my very first visit with my friend, Basim Hassan, and I was shadowing Basim. And I was sitting in listening to his conversation with Rob. Oh, there's Rob. We'll finish it. Let's go to a musical interlude and I will patch him in.
It's getting rough again, that's why you're coming to me. If you want my advice, it's time to change your life.
Cause all I'm hearing is the same old, same old. Make one wrong move and it could all be over. You got too much to lose, your son don't even know ya. When you play the game, you risk everything. Might be hard to say no, but what is a man if he ain't got his own? What is a man if he don't understand right from wrong to know how things should go? I need to know, tell me, what is a man?
Hey everybody, we're back, like promised, and I've got Robert Groves, re-entry Rob, on the line. Hi Rob, how are you?
Morning Stace, what's up LWAP listeners?
How are you doing today on this rainy Friday, rather?
Dodging the raindrops, I guess we should say. How'd the interview go?
Yeah, Carmen is a remarkable individual, so he enlightened us about you know, how it's been for him so far in over 40 years, serving a sentence for a crime he says he did not commit, that he is actively, fighting for his freedom for. And then we spoke with, his sister Regina, and she elaborated a little bit more too on what's involved, for their family in this fight.
I just showed you, I mean, I'm pretty sure you heard this, but the support systems, you know, it's just like there's always three sides. You know, you have the individual that's incarcerated, you have the victim's family, and then you also have our loved ones, you know, that love us unconditionally and on this roller coaster ride, you know, of proving our innocence or just being by our sides in general to help, you know, along the way. And it's, I'm glad you brought that up because, Stace here is a man who has been fighting for his innocence, like you said, for over 41 years. Sadly to say, people believe everybody in prison. If you're there, you must have did something. But I wrote something down, a little paragraph I want to read to you and our listeners, you know, just to give you a little, you know, facts behind people that are actually innocent and those who have been exonerated due to that. Since 1989, nearly 3,000 people have been exonerated in the United States. 131 of those are from Pennsylvania alone. 25 of those have come since 2018, and that's when Krasner officially revamped the Conviction Integrity Unit here in Philly. Lastly, my last point is, as of 2022, 191 death row prisoners have been exonerated. Some studies estimate roughly 4% of those still on death row are factually innocent. And I wanted to bring that point up because, if you know, unless you're living under a rock, you see exactly what's going on with a lot of the convictions being overturned within the city, and that comes from prior to Krasner, the district attorney's office.
Phoenix State Correctional Institution. This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Yeah, prior to Krasner, the district attorney's office and the Philadelphia Police Department had historically violated their sworn oath, you know, to uphold the Constitution. So why do I say that? Well, the district attorney's office, when they were under Lynn Abraham's regime, it was driven at this, you know, this win-at-any-cost culture. You know what I'm saying, Stace? And that means covering up fabricated confessions, planted evidence, and verbal and physical abuse, you know, that basically came at the hands of homicide detectives while they were in custody. So that's why all this dirt is starting to surface now from the 70s now to the late 2000s. It's actually, you know, a scary thought to imagine how many of those 5,400 serving life could have fallen victim to those same tactics. So, Stace, you know, you kind of know I'm a numbers man. So, let me do some simple math, you know, for our listeners. This is our fourth show together, am I correct?
Can I just say real quick, if I may?
Yes.
You know, for people like me, and anyone else who's kind of like me, I don't have anyone in my family who's been incarcerated. I don't really have anyone in my circles, my immediate circles. Well, now I do. I have a lot, but. This is really enlightening. You know, you can't get this from the movies. So I appreciate you explaining it this way. Go, give us your numbers.
I think, I think, before I give you the numbers, I think that that's what's so important about LWOP Radio, Life Without Parole, and also the Girl's Notebook, because, like you said, such as yourself, how do we, while I'm spitting off these numbers, how do we go ahead and educate the general public that says, okay, well, if you did
this
that,
is a call
this is what
SCI
you deserve.
So, correctional institution. This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Why should you be deserving of a second chance? Or what have you done since you've been incarcerated? And see, the general public has no idea what actually goes on behind bars, and that's why we went and created, and we're blessed with a platform such as LWOP Radio and also the Girls Notebook. So,
thank you to FetLife Station Lester Kineon, and thank you to Suave Gonzalez for that. Go ahead.
Ain't no doubt. My man. That's my man. This is our fourth show together, and I just wanted to say, look, I have 26 years in, right? Brother Miles, that we will be bringing back on. We had a little hiccup because the jail was locked down at the time. But Brother Miles, a.k.a. Shoes, is 52 years in. Mr. Stevenson, a.k.a. Juice, he has 49. And now you just interviewed Carmen just a couple minutes ago and his family, and he has 41.
40 and a half.
40, okay, yeah, you're right. But I like to give him some more. All right, so let's just say 40 and a half, but let's go ahead and narrow it out. I mean, for this number, 41 years. So that's a total of 168 years, right? So you just threw my math off a little bit, but it's still 168. If you average out the age of the four men that I just described, that's 66 years of age. One last stat line. The taxpayers have shelled out approximately 11 million space. That's you too. And everybody's listening. 11 million to house us four men. Just us four men who have served an average of.
Okay. $11 million to house four men.
Right. And that's equating it. They say it's approximately like 40,000. It is. As you get older in prison, when you get into your 50s and your 60s, then you have your medication. Then you have your more frequent visits to medical. A lot of these brothers have, you know, I'm sorry to say, have cancer. They have problems with their eyes.
Tell us about Charlie Dix. He couldn't do the show because.
Correct. He had to go off for a medical trip for his eyes because he actually travels around with a magnifying glass, see, because he can't actually see, you know, and this is a man that's been litigating his whole entire, but this dude helps hundreds of people out with their cases, because for real, Diggs is a lawyer, he's just incarcerated, but let me get back to this. Stace, do you know how many lifers are in Phoenix currently? Do you have any idea?
No, I don't.
The answer is 600. We house the most as far as lifers in the entire state.
And just again, these are people who are not even eligible at all for parole.
No, absolutely. In Pennsylvania, if you're sentenced for first or second degree, which is felony murder, it's an automatic mandatory life sentence where the judge doesn't even have wiggle room to even check back into your mitigating factors, such as your upbringing, what exactly happened in the crime, was it an accident? None of those factors are ever discussed or even heard because they're bound by that sentencing code. So just yesterday, I don't know if you've seen it on the news, Governor Shapiro announced he would push legislators to abolish the death penalty in Pennsylvania.
Mm.
So if nothing else, right? He said he would not sign another death warrant while he was in office. So I'm trying to make sense of his overall stance, though, Stace, right? If you think it's cruel and unusual to strap someone to a gurney and pump poison in their veins, why would you think locking someone in a cage for decades or for the remainder of their life until natural causes bring on the same result would be a humane alternative, right? Now, I'm not knocking it. It is pushing the needle in the right direction. And this is why we have to educate them. That's what we're doing each and every
day. Well, yeah. Look, I haven't been, I've been a volunteer prison monitor with PA Prison Society for just, I don't know, 5 or so months, 6 months, maybe something like that. And I haven't seen everything. But I can tell you from the little I've seen, it's not humane. There's nothing humane about spending time in prison. Nothing. It's the opposite, actually. It's not death, but it is. I don't have words.
And you, I'm saying you live it firsthand. Like you said, even though you just became a volunteer, you also have things you do outside of here, like you work with the juveniles. So it's like you get to see firsthand where maybe with us, when they say, okay, you know, they're grown men. They're going to fend for themselves when you're talking about juveniles, when they need to be molded, when they're the most impressionable when they're young. You know, you would think that they would get the most help. And I hope that we find the time to dedicate a show to those youth that mm-hmm. you work with, and maybe we can look into that.
Yeah, that's another whole topic, but
ain't no doubt. But I don't want to I want to touch on what you just said before I lose someone who may be on the fence with my argument on why there should be a parole mechanism in place for lifers who have displayed they're worthy of a second look. I want to stress the fact that while I am Rod, Matthew Rod Groves, without I'm serving a life without parole sentence, but my argument is not coming from this self-serving position space. And this is why I've created the Groves Notebook on Facebook, to provide this visual confirmation for those, who want to look for data that would, that would say, okay, we want to provide, alternatives to life without parole and then prove it to me. And once again, Life Without Parole, LWOP Radio. We're just simply trying to pull back the curtain and give you a glimpse into the thousands of lifers who have utilized their time, resources, productively, throughout their prison sentences. And I think this is important to say, and you're going to hear me say this probably every episode. And that's neither of these platforms I mentioned were designed to overshadow the pain that was inflicted upon those who were victimized by crime. We're just trying to provide an avenue by which we can pay our respects. We can honor those by showing our continual self-betterment. You also hear me say this phrase many times: who we were is not who we become.
Right.
I think that in order for this healing process space to...
That applies to every single one of us, too.
Yes. I need our listeners to know that when I'm speaking like this, I'm including the victims. I'm talking about this senseless stuff that's going on in the city as of right now. As of right now, I mean, we got people killing each other just over what is being said over social media. It's like the value of life is just—it just has.
How do you know about social media?
I mean,
you're in prison.
There's a reason why we landed this platform. They don't just get these platforms out to anybody, So I must know something. But no, I read a lot. I read a lot of space. I stay in tune. And I try to keep my foot in the street as much as possible, because I think that from here I have an obligation to try to help out what's currently going on in the city. And what I mean by that is 95% of the people in prison at one point or another will be going home today. So I'm a reentry assistant within Phoenix, within SCI Phoenix, and I work for parole. So I help the men with the resources before they go home. So if they need housing, they need employment, they need medical, they need clothing, I'm there. But most of all, I make sure that I go ahead, and we have cognitive behavioral groups, and I think it's extremely important that we come to grips for those who committed their crimes, who are actually, I ain't talking about the innocent, but come to grips with who you were, what you did, in order to never go back to that place. So society needs to understand that a lot of people such as myself, because I'm not an anomaly, there's many more men and women just like me throughout the state that work with these people that are going home. You know what I'm saying? Because we want them to return to their communities and your communities, mm-hmm. that is what the other prison.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that extremely, extremely important. So I don't never want when people tune in to LWOP Radio where we're just one directional or we're just, left wing. No, I see it. I feel it.
Have 1 minute left.
You know what I'm saying? Stacey?
1 minute. Yeah.
I want to say, unfortunately, that's my time. Y'all already know. Same place, same time, same fight. Remember to follow the Groves Notebook on Facebook. Check out our latest profiles. We got some more.
And make sure you follow. Make sure you follow the Groves Notebook page. Go ahead.
That's right. You want to see what life is doing with the time? You have two options: Groves Notebook and LWOP Radio, where you're currently at. But I also want to send out a shout out to a special friend of mine by the name of Lev, who is tuning in all the way from Tennessee. We got guests from all over station now. So, all right, LWOP Radio listeners, man, I'll see y'all next week. Stace, hold this down.
Yeah.
Rob, Lester, thank everybody, the platform, everybody. I'll see y'all next week, man.
I have a smile on my face, and I'm proud of you, and we're grateful. thank you for all you're doing. that's affecting us. You can see that you're way more than just where you are and what you're doing right now. In that.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
He was saying, "Mom, hey, Mom." So it's 9:50, and I've got about 5 minutes. This is the part of the show that I don't like because I have to just fill the space myself, and it's a little nerve-wracking for me, honestly. But I wanted to just finish. I was starting to say before Rob joined us, you know, how I met him, and I was saying that I met him on my first visit, my first visit out with Wasim, and just eavesdropping and, you know, just shadowing, listening to their conversation on an official, you know, report, on an official prison society trip report. And I was so moved by the way Rob spoke. I mean, you can hear him. He's so articulate. He's so intelligent. He's so impassioned. And he's already done, I should know this, but I think it's around 25 years. He's already served 25 years into a sentence. And I was just listening to him talk about all that he'd done already at SCI Phoenix. So Rob used to head this program called Man Up. Some of you might know what I'm talking about, but basically where the incarcerated would put on skits, they would do stand-up. I think there was a little bit of music, and they perform, and they would have this wasn't just internally inside the prison, but they would have guests from the outside come, and tons of positive feedback about it. And that all got shut down when COVID hit. So he was telling me about that, and he was telling me about all the other programming that they were receiving that also got shut down because of COVID, and how it hadn't started back up yet. And, you know, I have a history of being a teacher and an educator, and of course, I love the arts, and I was like really saddened to hear that, and was leaning into like what could be done. And then he started to say, "Well, I've moved on, and I'm doing something. I'm doing this project called the Groves Notebook." Again, this is on Facebook, and it's a platform for us to feature incarcerated people who are serving life without parole, and to also put the documentation, you know, 50, 75 or more pages of all their certifications, all of their trainings, all of their, you know, all of the proof, all of the evidence that they have, you know, college degrees, high school diplomas, you know, skills training in various trades. And it's just kind of, you know, people can really see for themselves how people have decided to educate themselves, to grow, to transform, and that they would do something very different if they were able at this point in their lives to be free, and that they would, you know, make a real difference in the world, in their communities. And I said, "Well, if you need any help, let me know. I'd love to help you." And then little did I know that, sorry, someone's calling in on my phone line right now. But little did I know that, you know, I would start emailing with him, and then we'd start talking on the phone, and it's been several months. I haven't seen Rob since that first visit in person, but we have been in constant contact via email and phone calls, and developed a really great working relationship, and also a friendship. So, and he's doing the show, and I'm just assisting. So Rob is connecting with different guys on the inside that he thinks, you know, not that he thinks, just as many guys as he can find that he knows and thinks would be great to be on this platform. He then helps them to figure out what they want to speak about. They craft questions together. He helps them because these guys only have a certain amount of time on the phone, you know, before they're going to get cut off, and they've got to be pretty succinct. He helps coach them, and it's not easy. Like, if they're not on his block, he can't always find them, you know, to meet up with them. He's got to wait for the right moment. He's got to make it happen. He helps coordinate with their family. How are they going to get to me so I can interview them on the radio? You know, with the call list situation, he talks with me and helps me understand the best way to facilitate the show. I mean, last night, he's like this nag, like, you know, we'll decide on something, and then I get this email from him, you know, in the wee hours of the night. "Don't forget, blah, blah, blah," you know. And I would have forgotten. That's the thing. I would totally forget. So it's really Rob who is bringing these voices from behind the walls to the outside, and the voices of their family members to the airwaves, and I'm assisting. And I'm honored to be able to be part of this process. Next week, we're going to speak with another incarcerated individual. I don't want to definitely put out the name because sometimes it changes. We've got lockdown situations, and sometimes people have medical visits. But check. You can connect with me at Stacey Mandel on Facebook and see my posts. Also, Your Big Mind on Instagram. I share the posts there. My website is www.yourbigmind.com. And you can get updated there. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Life Without Parole, LWAP Radio, with me and with Reentry Rob. And please visit the Groves Notebook. It's a page, not the group, a page on Facebook. And contact the site manager, Suave Gonzalez. And then once you're on the Groves Notebook, we would love to invite you to be on LWAP Radio. Thank you to Lester Kinnion. Thank you to Suave. And everybody have an enjoyable weekend. Bye-bye.
Philadelphia, Philadelphia, are you ready? City of Brotherly Love. Home of Smoking Joe Frazier. Come on. It's about that time. FetLifeStation.com. Philly Fridays, baby. Come on.